And this is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Monday morning, August 17th. 58 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City under partly sunny skies. We've got 53 degrees in the Heber Valley, again, also with partly sunny skies. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Monday morning. We are going to be talking about lots of sunshine. We'll call it mostly sunny skies across the Wasatch back today after a somewhat comfortable start this morning. We'll see those temperatures climbing into the mid-80s for highs in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing right around 90 degrees for us in the Heber Valley. We will be seeing a warming trend as we go throughout most of this week. So those temperatures will get a little warmer each day. High temperatures warming back into the low to mid-80s for us in Park City as we go throughout your Tuesday. We'll be looking at those highs around 90 degrees, probably lower 90s for us in the Heber Valley. Now, once we get to about Wednesday, again, we can't rule out a spotty pop-up shower, but it's mainly going to be dry through about Thursday, but we'll call Wednesday partly cloudy skies, slight chance of a pop-up, highs in the mid-80s in Park City. We'll be in the low 90s in the Heber Valley. We're going to jump into the upper 80s for highs by Thursday in Park City. I think one of the warmest days of the week will be in the mid-90s for highs in the Heber Valley. We'll stay in the mid-90s for highs in the Heber Valley as we go into your Friday. We'll be in the upper 80s still, near 90 for highs in Park City for your Friday. We'll see a better chance of those isolated storms popping up for us as we go into your Friday afternoon with, I think, a little more scattered to not widespread shower and storm activity as we go into the weekend. That's because we're going to be seeing that monsoonal moisture flow returning across the area, and that's going to pump in a little bit more of that moisture. So once again, the potential of those downpours along with that isolated risk of flash flooding will return for Friday, Saturday, into Sunday. Meanwhile, temperatures Friday will be in the upper 80s in Park City. We'll be into the mid-90s for you in the Heber Valley. But then we start to trend lower as we increase those moisture levels. Highs only in the low 80s for Park City for your Saturday and Sunday, with highs only around the upper 80s in the Heber Valley. That's a look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
It's 8:08 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with the president of Intermountain Park City Hospital, Lori Weston, and spokesperson Amy Tuttenham have details on the opening of the new cancer wing. From the Youth Sports Alliance, Programs Director Heather Sims and Development Director Ashley Lasco with details on this year's Jan's Winter Welcome and the upcoming youth sport programs. Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang with a rundown of the inaugural Park City Film Festival in October, and from Park City Recreation Assistant Director Tate Shaw with an update on the new pool issues, the fall programming, as well as the construction update on the mine. Then stay tuned for Mountain Money. Author Feroz Ansari talks about his new book, The Wisdom and Wealth Solution, Unlocking the Secrets of Happiness, Purpose, and Financial Security. Then Patrick Neville of Parsons, Bailey & Latimer discusses the massive antitrust case brought by a number of state attorneys generals seeking to stop Paramount Skydance's merger with Warner Brothers Discovery. All of that coming up next hour, Monday from 9 to 10. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:10 on this Monday morning. Well, Intermountain Park City Hospital will be celebrating the opening of its new cancer center this Thursday with a ribbon cutting and public tour. In the studio with details, I have president of Intermountain Park City Hospital, Lori Weston, along with Amy Tuttenham, spokesperson for the hospital system. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So, Lori, maybe just start and tell us just when and where is the grand opening.
Yeah. Our grand opening is this Thursday, August 20th. It starts at 5 p.m. and goes until 8.
Okay, and everyone's invited to attend?
The public is invited. We welcome everyone. We'll have a short program at 5:30, and we'll do tours of the Cancer Center, and also there will be food and beverages there as well.
Okay. People just come in through the main entrance then?
Yes, you can come in through the main entrance. We have valet services. You can also drive around to the back. We have a third entrance of the hospital on the back side of the hospital. That entrance goes right into the radiation and cancer center, so you can park in the back of the hospital and walk in.
Okay, so why was a new cancer wing needed at Park City Hospital?
You know, as our community has grown and more and more people are coming into our community to live but access services, cancer services was one that we've been watching over the years, and with our patients that have had to be traveling down for cancer care. We've been monitoring that. A lot of the patients that we transfer out of the hospital need to go down for cancer services. And so this is something that was definitely a community need as Intermountain looked at that across the Wasatch back and then even beyond into the Uinta and Wyoming area. We get a lot of patients that come down from that area as well. It was important to have a cancer hub here.
Yeah, any idea in terms of the number and the types of cancer that you've seen a change in? In the community?
Yeah, in the community, our most prevalent cancers are, of course, skin cancer. We're at high risk of skin cancer here, but also breast cancer, prostate cancer, thyroid are some of the ones that we see the most here at Park City.
Yeah, so what does the new cancer wing include? I mean, what services and facilities will patients have?
Yeah, the biggest addition to the cancer center is the radiation therapy. We currently at both Park City and Heber have infusion and chemotherapy, but we will be adding the radiation therapy with this new wing at the hospital.
Okay, so can you talk to us a little bit about how radiation is different than the chemo or the infusion services?
Yeah, both chemo and infusion and radiation, you have to get those treatments multiple times a week, sometimes every day. And to be able to be dealing with the burden of cancer, but then also feel ill and have to drive down to the valley either daily or multiple times a week really impacts your health and mental well-being.
Yeah. Well, patients, I guess what would require somebody to continue to go to Salt Lake for?
Really for specialty care, for subspecialty care. So if there is a cancer that or a surgery that is needed that we can't do at Park City, we would be sending those down. So for maybe things like you've got a brain cancer or lung cancer, blood cancer, those things that need specialty treatment will still need to go down to the valley. But the radiation and chemo services that are core to cancer care can all be done here on the Wasatch Back.
Okay. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, how much of a difference it will make to patients and their families to be able to receive the care locally instead of making that commute?
Yeah, and it really takes an emotional toll when you're dealing with cancer, and not only on the patient, but also the caretakers. To be exhausted and sick and driving down multiple times during the week really makes it a lot easier when you don't have to make a long travel back and forth.
Yeah, and I'm guessing you talked with patients and doctors before, you know, while planning the new treatment center. What was some of their input that they gave?
They're excited to have this here. We've got currently we have a doctor that works at Park City Hospital and one at Heber Valley Hospital doing medical oncology, and just the difference it's made in the well-being of our patients, being able to have the care closer to home and care that is just as good, and I might add it might even be better at Park City Hospital and Heber Hospital, but to have the same high-quality care closer to home makes a huge difference. To be able to take care of yourself mentally and physically closer to where you live.
Yeah, so have there been big changes in the treatment of radiation since this is really what you're adding?
You know, the linear accelerator we are adding, there's been a lot of improvements with the linear accelerator. It's shorter time spent in the linear accelerator. So you can go for shorter time and also a shorter amount of days as well with the equipment we're installing.
Okay. So how big of a wing did you add on?
We've got about 10,000 square feet. We've got 18 infusion bays, 6 of those are private bays, and then we've got the radiation center. Also adding to wound care as well. We'll have a full-time wound care center in that area as well.
All right, so is that it for the hospital expansion, or do you have room for more?
We have on that part, we'll be full there at the cancer center, but we are also building out our emergency room and surgery as well. Our emergency room is adding 4 trauma bays, and our surgery will be adding 2 more ORs, 2 more endo suites. And then we'll be shelling one OR for future use for any growth in additional services that we may be bringing on. That'll be coming online the end of December, hopefully right in time for our winter season.
Okay, so there still is some ongoing construction
there
happening.
Is. Yes, there is.
And is that it then? Or is that
for right now, we're still watching it. We have one more place on the campus that we can build out, you know, with the density that we have. And that was really in our master plan pegged for more inpatient growth. A lot of our services now are more outpatient. Healthcare is moving more outpatient. So we'll just be monitoring that like we do everything to see what is the right next step and what is our community needing.
Yeah. And the cost of the new cancer treatment facility, I mean, what did you guys have to spend?
We were about $30 million in our construction and equipment budget for the expansion.
Okay. And that comes from fundraising? And
it does. Multiple areas. Intermountain up front, the capital cost, and then we are fundraising for operational costs, getting staffed and resourced and those things. So, yes.
Yeah. So you will have to add more staff then, huh?
We will. We will be adding staff.
Yeah. How many more patients per year do you think you can add on?
We're expecting, from what we see that is in this area, we're expecting about 1,500 visits a year in the cancer center.
Okay. The facility is now fully operational?
We will be moving into that after our grand opening. We want to keep it all clean and nice before we, you know, before we put patients there. But we will start seeing patients in that center on the 24th of August.
Okay. All right. Anything else you guys want to add?
No, I think that's it. We're excited. Please come out and see us. Again, it's an open house, so just pop in, take a tour. We will have the surgeons and all our physicians there to answer questions. And so just stop by and say hello.
Okay. Well, congratulations on getting that done.
Thank you, Leslie.
Okay. Lori Weston, again, president of Intermountain Park City Hospital. Again, that open house happening this Thursday, 5 to 8 p.m. there at Park City Hospital at Quinns Junction. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:19. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, tickets are on sale now for the 46th annual Jan's Winter Welcome. In the studio with details, I have Youth Sports Alliance Development Director Ashley Lasco, as well as Youth Programs Director Heather Sims. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Ashley, let's start with you and talk a little bit about Jan's Winter Welcome. When and where?
Yes, we're very excited about this year celebrating the 46th annual Jan's Winter Welcome. It's Saturday, October 24th, back up at Stein Erickson Lodge. I do have a few tables and a few individual tickets remaining. So if you're interested, please reach out to me or check out our website at ysausa.org.
Wow, that's crazy that, I mean, months in advance, nearly sold out.
We are, yep.
Okay. You also have the opportunity drawn that everyone can participate in, and you usually have some fabulous grand prizes. So tell me about this year's.
We're really excited about this package this year. The Intermountain Health Opportunity Drawing is a prize that will send one lucky winner and a guest to the 2027 Formula One in Miami. So the Miami Grand Prix this year in May. It is a great package that includes 3 days of racing, MSC Yacht Club access, food and beverage, priority parking, and then a $2,000 travel credit.
Okay, and people can participate by donating?
So yes, you purchase a suggested donation of $50. You can work with kids in the clubs directly on the YSA website, but the winner will be drawn on October 24th, and you do not need to be present to win.
Okay, and this is actually one of the bigger fundraisers that you do. How much money does the drawing raise?
Well, last year in total, we helped our partner teams raise almost $310,000 through the opportunity drawing ticket sales, but also through the auction. And then another $252,000 was raised for need-based scholarships for athletes training with our partner teams.
Okay, yeah, so if you do know athletes on one of the seven teams, then get the tickets there.
Reach out to the athletes. They are actively selling tickets. And just a reminder that money goes back to the teams at 100%. So if an athlete sells you a ticket, that money goes directly to their team. So no overhead there.
All right. Some of the money that raised goes to support athlete scholarships. So tell us more about this. I mean, how much does YSA contribute to athlete scholarships every year?
Well, we provide scholarships, as I said, to students in our, to athletes in our winter partner programs. That scholarship window is actually open for this upcoming year. So they're need-based training scholarships. The window is open now through August 31st. So athletes, a reminder that if you're applying, please ask for the entire year of expenses. It's one window here that covers the entire year. But a great note that since 2010, YSA has given $1.6 million in need-based support to these winter sports athletes. So just a reminder that those seven partner clubs are the Figure Skating Club of Park City, Park City Ice Miners Hockey, Park City Speed Skating Club, Park City Ski and Snowboard, the Utah Olympic Park Skeleton and Bobsled, Wasatch Freestyle, and Wasatch Luge. So if you have an athlete in any of those seven partner clubs and need-based scholarship, please reach out to our team by the end of August.
Okay, and parents will need to provide some financial information to
yes.
verify that need-based.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see, Heather, school starts this week. I'm guessing you have some after-school programs that kids might be interested in.
We do. Yeah, registration is already open for our first session of after-school programs. We have so much planned this year with in Summit and Wasatch County. We have mountain biking, basketball, sailing, triathlon, Buzz Kids, which is a theater program, lacrosse, bouldering. We do programs at Woodward, Fit Stop, golf. We have dog sledding with Rancho Luna Lobos, which is always popular. And they vary by school district, but they are open and on the website.
Okay, and just it depends on where you are because you don't have everything in all districts.
Yeah, so we do try and offer programs for both counties, but yeah, you do have to choose which district, but you hopefully you'll be able to do all those programs in each county.
Okay, and are you at every school now as well?
On the Wasatch back, yes. We are in the high schools. We do offer a couple of programs, but all the elementary and middle schools, yeah.
Okay, and tell me about this special one-day program in October with the Lindsay Vonn Foundation.
Yes, so this is our second year working with the Lindsay Vonn Foundation, and it's a one-day program and working with the winter schools. This will be offered to middle schoolers, which is what we did last year. And then new this year, we're also offering a workshop for third through fifth graders. It's a hands-on, high-energy workshop focused on building confidence, grit, and leadership, and registration is also online for that.
Is that a free program?
So it is a minimal cost. I think it's it might be $20. Sorry, I can't remember. But yeah, it is. But we are offering a very a free course on avalanche safety. So if people are interested in that for their kids, that is on the website as well. And that is for middle schoolers.
Okay. And again, you do offer scholarships for these after-school programs. How does that work?
Yeah, so we do. We have three different rates. We have our rack rate, and then we have for any family that earns less than $120,000 or less, they can apply for a scholarship. It's a 50% discount code that they can use for the whole year. And then for any students that are on the free and reduced lunch program, they can choose the scholarship ticket.
All right. And then volunteers is what makes the program go around.
Oh, gosh, I couldn't run the programs without our amazing volunteers. And so we are always needing volunteers. And if anybody signs up for the full 4 weeks, they actually get their program for free. So we would love anybody that is willing to sign up through our website at ysausa.org.
Okay. Let's see. Tell me about this Power of Play program.
Yeah, so we've been doing this program for the last since 2024, and so this one that we're doing is on athletes and sponsorships, and we're focusing on how social media has changed the way athletes represent themselves. We'll look at what sponsors are actually looking for in an athlete and what makes someone a strong representative for a brand beyond their performance or their field on snow. We have Jamie Starr, the marketing director at the National Ability Center. He'll moderate the panel. And currently we have Courtney Hawkins, who's the communications director at US Ski and Snowboard, and Chris McKay, who's the marketing director for Scott Sports. And they'll do a panel. This is free for anybody that wants to participate. It's on September 22nd from 6 till 7:30, and it will take place at the National Ability Center, the hub that they have there. And people can register on our website again at ysausa.org.
So is this something for athletes and their families?
So we're looking, athletes, parents, coaches. Often coaches are the first person to be asked, you know, how do I get sponsorship? So we're really looking at trying to be an education panel on how to go about getting sponsorship, how to really use social media responsibly. Athletes kind of are on with cameras now. You're on, people can video you 24/7, so don't do anything silly.
Let's see, again, this is September 22nd, 6 to 7:30 p.m. ysausa.org if somebody's interested in registering for that. It sounds like this is going to be the first year that you're participating in Serve Park City. This is the National Day of Service.
Yes, we're really excited to join this year. We're asking that the community help keep local kids warm this winter. So we are collecting new and gently used winter clothing, youth winter clothing, for our after-school program participants. So if you can collect them from friends, from family, from neighbors or coworkers, you can drop them off at a few different locations. So we will be participating on September 19th between 9 a.m. and noon. And those three locations are our office, the YSA office at 725 Parkway Drive, Jan's Mountain Outfitters at 1600 Park Avenue, or Christie Sports out by the Whole Foods on Landmark Drive. So we're collecting jackets, winter pants, base layers, hats and gloves, winter socks as well, if they're new and would be appropriate for our programs. So kids, youth, and adult small sizes would be ideal.
Okay, and so they're going to collect it, or
so if they collect them from the community, from themselves, from their mudroom, from friends and from coworkers, then come to one of those three drop-off locations. There'll be collection bins at those spots. So okay. We also do need volunteers to help at those locations. So if you are interested, please reach out to us at YSA to help collect the items and then deliver them back to YSA.
Okay. Okay, so this isn't necessarily, or is this for YSA children, the clothing?
Yes.
Or is it for the kids? Okay.
Yes, so these are, we are collecting clothing for our program participants. But we do ask that if you have winter sports equipment, such as skis or boots or skates or hard goods, that those actually do not get donated to this project, but just go directly to the Christian Center. That would be great. So we're really just focused on apparel.
Okay. Anything else, ladies, you wanted to mention?
No, I think everybody can find what we talked about today on our website, which is, again, ysausa.org.
Okay. Ashley Lasko, Heather Sims, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW News Time 830. News Time 8:31. Good morning. Still to come, we'll be checking in with Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang about the inaugural Park City Film Festival that's scheduled, just being released this morning, and from Park City Recreation Assistant Director Tate Shaw with an update on some of the fall programming, the construction of the mine, and some of the new pool issues that they've experienced this summer. Taking a look now at some news, Basin Recreation cut its $150 million bond proposal by more than half in hopes of getting it onto the November ballot. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports district leaders want to work with the community on construction plans.
District Director Robert Parrish will return to the Summit County Council with a $71 million bond proposal. The Basin Recreation Board gave its blessing to that plan on Thursday. County Council members are expected to vote on whether to put the bonds on the November 3rd ballot at their August 19th meeting. Basin Rec's original proposal was for $150 million in debt, which would finance two new field houses, one focused on climbing in Jeremy Ranch and a larger one in Silver Creek Village with aquatics. Parrish says that was based on community outreach and taxpayer feedback. Once Basin Rec firmed up the budget and construction plans, that feedback changed.
And I think what people were realizing is that, okay, what they want isn't exactly what they need, particularly at the for property tax level. So they've asked us to come back smaller. So the program will be smaller than what we started with in May.
The $71 million budget was chosen to cover soft costs like insurance and planning and have enough left over for labor and building materials.
Our net construction will probably be around $59 to $60 million is what we're going to budget for. And right now, we don't know exactly what that's going to get. We are meeting with our architects and engineers to kind of figure out what we can program for that cost, whether it is one facility or two.
He says residents will be part of that process, which he compared to the way the Trailside Wheels Park design was iterated. The Recreation District says it wants to build new facilities to accommodate new growth. According to its own internal calculations, the existing field house in Kimball Junction will reach capacity next year. District leaders also say population increases will decrease individual taxpayers' share of whatever debt they eventually issue, provided the county council puts the bond question on November's ballot. A simple majority is needed to pass it. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
News time now, 8:34. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Park City Film will be hosting the inaugural Park City Film Festival in October. On the phone with a preview of what's being scheduled, I have the executive director of Park City Film, Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie. Good morning.
Yep, can you hear me?
Okay, I hear you now. So tell us when and where the festival will be held.
So the dates are October 23rd through 25th. We have programmed 9 film blocks and 4 panel discussions. All of the films will be taking place at the Jim Santee Auditorium, our home theater, formerly a venue for the Sundance Film Festival for over 30. So a great place to kick things off. And then we'll have the panel discussions over in District F, which is Prospector Square, across from Urban Sailor Coffee, depends on how long you've lived in town, near Windy Ridge as well. But trying to activate different parts of town and get people moving throughout the community and celebrate our new film festival.
Yeah, so why did you decide October instead of going back to the Sundance time frame of January?
Well, so our intention is really we're not replacing the Sundance Film Festival. I mean, one, they still exist. We hope they are. As sad as we are that they are leaving Park City in Utah, we wish them great success in Boulder. I'll be going out there to see the film festival. I mean, it is so important, independent film, that they do well in their new location. So really what we're imagining is a new film festival. A film festival being created in 2026 has different opportunities than one that was created in the 1980s. So trying to get back to the essence of what Robert Redford was trying to create with Sundance, or did create with Sundance, for 40 years ago, of really connecting filmmakers and audiences together and kind of leaning into that sense of discovery of just, I mean, I think all of us cinephiles have that experience of seeing a film where it just kind of blew your mind, right? Changed how you thought about the world and other people and other cultures. And so kind of really getting back to that core essence, but doing it in a way that is appropriate for an organization of our size as well. So this is really testing the waters. It's going to be a boutique film festival experience this first year, but the intention is to build onto that. So, again, we'll just be doing all the film screenings at the Jim Santee, 9 film blocks. We're not starting out, 10 days, replicating Sundance. So it makes sense for many reasons to also be at a time of year when there's not a lot going on in our community. And we had an exceptionally bad winter, as we all know. So bringing back people to the community, over 55,000 people used to come to the Sundance Film Festival from the state of Utah. So inviting them back at a time of year when, generally restaurants are not full. There's occupancy. You're able to get a room quite easily, probably in a local hotel. So, thinking really consciously about how can we benefit our community, not just culturally, but also economically.
Okay, so that October timeframe will likely stick.
You know what? To be determined, but it is, again, it's a time of year where there's a great opportunity to bring people in, to get sponsorships. Park City Lodging has come on as one of our sponsors, as has the Park City Chamber, just for that reason, because they're like, hey, this is great. Let's work together. We've been part of this community. We were started because of this community's love for independent cinema. We've been around over 30 years. So really, it behooves us to think, intentionally about what we're doing. How do we connect with the businesses, the people around us, as we're bringing on something that, the hope is and the intention is that it will grow over time. But how can it be a benefit to all of us?
Okay. So I guess what's the vision for the film festival?
You know, Sundance created a tsunami effect every year, right? It was film, it was ideas, it was these amazing people from all over the globe that would come here and just be so inspirational. You know, Muhammad Yunus, Jacinda Ardern, you know, film directors, all of these people, and just, I mean, it was stunning. It was kind of hard to describe, and just, I mean, it makes me sad to think about, you know, having them gone. But what we can create into, you know, that would kind of replace that effect is to create kind of waves of creativity throughout the year. So Park City Film, of course, is the only art house cinema in the Wasatch Back, so it behooves us in terms of, you know, thinking about films and independent cinema to really step up and say, how can we invite people into our community and engage with films that they might not see anywhere else? I mean, the films that we've selected this year are films that have been doing well on the 2026 film festival circuit. They've premiered at other film festivals, but they're not out for general release yet. So it's still a film that you may not be able to see somewhere else. So leaning into that storytelling, that sense of creativity, that connectivity, creating those conversations and opportunities for people to come together around ideas that may be challenging, you know, maybe something that's eye-opening, and just really using art as that way to connect people together. And so that's really the vision, what that looks like over time. Film exhibition, film festivals have changed dramatically since COVID. So kind of thinking of, we've been having lots of conversations with other film festivals, with filmmakers, with audiences, of just what do they want? Where are the opportunities? So it's kind of this evolution as we go along, and we're inviting people this first year to come along for the ride and let us know. We do want people's feedback. You know, the program isn't intentionally eclectic this first year, so that we can bring people in with all different tastes, you know, from all different communities to engage with the film festival.
So did you have a submission period, or did you just personally ask filmmakers that you were aware of that had films out on the circuit?
So these are all hand-selected films. I have a team of programmers, and, you know, as we went to these film festivals, we were looking at different films, you know, a number of films that we were hoping to get got picked up for distribution, and that was, you know, an important criteria for us this year of, like, okay, let's try and get films that would not be able, people might not be able to see outside the film festival circuit. A lot of films get released in the fall, so fall is somewhat tricky in terms of timing for a film festival. Some are personal connections. Some are just people are really super excited to hear that Park City is going to continue to showcase and celebrate independent cinema. I mean, that's probably been the most consistent feedback I've gotten from people in the community and the film festival and, you know, independent film community, are just like, oh, we're so excited. Even if they can't come, just keep us on the list. Let us know what's happening. How can we help? How can we support? You know, Park City means so much to us. It's brought so much to us as filmmakers and to our community of film lovers that, you know, we really want that to continue, that story to continue in this town.
So you mentioned 9 films will be screened. What can you tell us about the lineup?
Sure. So we've got 5 documentaries and 4 narrative films. The opening night film, which is really exciting, is by Park City local and graduate of the University of Utah's film program. It's called The Life We Leave, J.J. Gerber's new film. It's his directorial debut. This is a film that you did not know that you needed to see, but you absolutely do, because it will change the way that you think about death and grief. Then we're showing Teeth to the Wind, which is a shorter film. We're doing a short film block, because generally short films you can't see outside the film festival environment. This is Drew Smith and Ben Knight's new film. It's a film about Mike Gardner and Sam Hennessy, who are alpinists and, you know, achieving great things kind of in the mountains in a very understated way, but they're also soul brothers, and so it's as much about their relationship with each other as it is their relationship with the mountains. So I thought perfect for this community here in Park City. Adam's Apple is a documentary about a transgender teen and his mother, and it's 2 decades of footage that trace Adam's path to manhood and his parents' vulnerability as they reckon with change. Zet June is Alex Camilleri's new film. He came here to Sundance previously with Lutsu, and this is a film from Malta, and it's about finding home and the discovery of the beauty of culture through traditional folk music. Brian is a narrative film. This is Will Ropp's first film. It's a coming-of-age narrative starring Ben Wang. It's awkward, and it's funny, and it's a story that I think all of us can see a little bit of our teenage selves in. Gymnast of Fisherman Colony by Habiba Nasheen is about young girls in Pakistan who were finding their voice in a repressive society through sport. So not gymnastics like Olympics, the way we think of in our town, but just how you can really find your place in society through sport. Next Life is from Drake Doremus, also a Sundance Film Festival alum, and this is the story of Paths Not Taken, how a chance encounter could change your life. Frank and Lewis premiered here at Sundance this year, Petra Volpe, and this is a story, a narrative film about prisoners that have been sentenced to life terms that are taking care of other prisoners that suffer from dementia. And it really raises questions about justice and redemption. Beautiful film that really will stick with you. And then the last film, and I have to admit this is a little bit of a personal touch, being a native New Yorker, but this is called The Last Critic. It's Maddie Wishnow's directorial debut, and it's about the Dean of Rock Critics, Robert Christgau, who wrote for The Village Voice in New York for over 30 years about music and five-sentence capsules that are just poetry on the page. So beautiful, just the written word, thinking about criticism and its role in the place of in art. So again, New Yorker story, but a great way to wrap everything up. So we'll have a number of the filmmakers will be coming to Park City to speak after the films. We'll have panel discussions, as I mentioned, four of those. Some are directly tied to the films, some kind of more thematic with local filmmakers, but the panels will be released in a couple of weeks. We have the film program and all the film tickets available today.
Yeah, and I see that you've got festival passes on sale. $300 gets you just basically a film, a ticket to each of the films and panels, up to $2,500. Will individual single film tickets be sold as well?
They're on sale today. We just launched it this morning. Those are $20 per ticket.
Okay.
So tickets and panels are the same price. And then if you get a pass, kind of the benefit to getting the pass. One, of course, you're investing in early to the festival, which we greatly appreciate, but you'll also get a badge that gets you early access to the theater. So I know everyone has their favorite seat in our theater, so this is a way to ensure that you get the seat that you want, or at least close to it, depending on how many people are in the theater at the time. But that's the benefit for the pass, as opposed to doing the individual tickets.
Okay, so you're not going to be honoring punch passes or anything like that, huh?
No, we can't, unfortunately. I mean, it's a very different ticket price, our punch passes, for our regular series. Of course, we're based off an $8 ticket price, and just financially, the economics don't work out for the festival to have those honored for that, for the film festival.
Okay. Tell me, just real quick, the logistical challenges of launching a festival from scratch.
Certainly getting access to the films, that's been a great learning curve. People, again, have been quite generous in the community, just saying, hey, I know these folks, I know producers, I know filmmakers, helping to make some connections. Because it's different from how we normally program films, where we go through film distributors, we have a film booker, that's a little bit more straightforward, and something we've been doing for over three decades. So going directly to a filmmaker, making sure it fits with their schedules, getting travel, I mean, some of those logistics. But, we've been a venue for the Sundance Film Festival for so many years, decades, that we know what it looks like operationally. And there's a lot of complexity to it, but sticking with a venue that's a set venue like we have reduces some of the logistical challenges when you talk about building out, the Mark back in the day or the Temple. That created its own potential problems with events. Anyone that's an event knows, you plan for the best and expect the worst. So you want to reduce as many variables as you possibly can, and that's certainly something that we looked at this year with the festival, of just making sure that we could execute at the highest level in both of the venues that we've selected, and make that as simple as possible, knowing that, of course, there's always going to be some challenges. Hopefully it won't snow, but the weather should generally be nice in October.
Yeah. So do you anticipate that it would ever expand beyond the 2 days and opening night?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is the intention, is that it would be a much larger festival. What exactly that looks like, I can't tell you today, because we will be growing as we go. But really, it's the idea is that it will grow into something bigger. But we're trying to kind of be, cautious and grow within the bounds of what we know, and so that we can make sure that we can sustain the growth over time. It would be, tragic if we came out, kind of collapsed under the weight of our ambitions and made it too big too quickly. And I think that's, any entrepreneur will tell you that, that is always the risk. And we want to make sure that we are building a sustainable model that we can sustain over time and, for decades, hopefully.
Okay. All right. Anything else people want to know?
So tickets and passes and the film program are all on sale now. It's all live, parkcityfilm.org/festival. I want to thank our major sponsors who came on early to help us out, Park City Chamber, Summit County Wrap and Restaurant Tax Grants, Park City Lodging, Great Cliff Capital. We could not do all of this without the support we've received from our community. And, you know, we hope that people come out. We've certainly selected these films with our community in mind. So I think there is something for everyone, and hopefully you will come see all of them, because that's the idea.
Okay, Katie Wang, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Katie Wang is the executive director of Park City Film. Again, the Park City inaugural Park City Film Festival happening October 23rd through the 25th at the Jim Sani Auditorium. It's 8:48 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. In the studio now with an update from Park City Recreation, I have Assistant Director Tate Shaw. Good morning, Tate.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so first off, give us an update on the pools. I recall seeing signs that the pools were closed for what seemed like weeks. What happened there?
You know, we actually weren't closed for weeks. We had just a short little window of time where, we had a pump failure on our on one of the pools. It was unfortunate, but we were able to get that thing back up and running. Certain pumps are not just on the shelf, and it's frustrating when it's a brand new facility to be able to have something like that happen. But we worked through it. We had some growing pains there, and we finished really strong with the summer.
Okay, so it was our chlorine pump, I think I heard.
Yeah, so it was a chemical feeder, and as it runs through, but yes, it is a circulation pump that runs through. Everything has to meet its turnover and flow rates, and when you don't have that, it's just not a safe space for long-term and high bather load use. So we had no choice but to shut down in an effort to make sure that that was corrected, and it ended up being one particular portion of the overall pump mechanical system on that pool.
Yeah, so was it just a bad apple? I mean, just a part that was bad to begin with?
Or? Yeah, unfortunately, that's exactly what we think's going on. We had some concerns with it just in general right when it first was going, and then we had that electrical failure that happened inside the pump itself, so the pump ultimately short-circuited.
Yeah, and it just affected the kids' pool, or are both pools on the same system?
No, so they're on separate systems. Mm-hmm. So it was just the activity pool was closed down for right around the 4th of July. It was very unfortunate.
Okay, well, things are really starting to wind down for you with summer, or with school starting this week. Let's kind of get a summer recap.
Sure.
We've got camps over.
Yeah, first and foremost, I think it's important to just say thank you to the community for such a good summer and patience with us during construction, from, parking to the community center and the mine, and just impacts with what's going on. 2026 will be a summer that we'll remember very much so for a lot of activity and construction. And that said, we had a very successful summer in all things recreation. Our summer camp, our daily kid average was almost the exact same this year as it was last year. Just a few numbers off there. But our summer camp staff, we were named Park City's best summer camp through the Park Record, the awards and such. And so that's one of those things that's a big thing for us. Our camp directors did a phenomenal job, especially with being at Miners Hospital. So that finished strong. That last day was last Friday.
Okay. Yeah, because I saw them still using the fields and stuff and playing out there. They just used a different building.
Yeah, exactly. And they used, the historic Miners Hospital. And, with no playground available, they were definitely outside there adjacent to the Jack Green Bandstand often. And, it was a lot of moving parts, but the team did phenomenal. And, again, just thank you to all the participants for the year. It was a successful summer.
Yeah. What about the rest of the summer programs? You're able to do the swim lessons and...
Yeah, swim lessons were great. We actually, it was pretty awesome. On Friday, we actually had a kind of a conclusion of our summer pool season by way of our summer swim team. We have a pre-comp swim team, and we did the cookie meet. So there were sugar cookies there, and we had kids from different comp teams from around the Wasatch Back that were there to swim together and compete in a fun, semi-competitive effort where there was cookies and ribbons and all that. It was a great day. The facilities in and of themselves, with everything that we were doing, from tennis and pickleball programming to fitness programming, the socials, the youth tennis, the outdoor activities, the pools, there's been a lot that's been going on. And the pool itself was a great new amenity to have, whether you were in camps and then wanting a place to go get out of the summer heat. The pool was definitely busy.
All right. Any other summer highlights for you?
We've got some just again, thank you to the community for what's going on with it. I mean, we had big numbers in a lot of programs and stuff when we take into consideration what happened in a construction season. You know, we had 250 tennis clinics that were going on. We had, you know, almost 2,000 tennis participants, adult tennis participants in our camps and clinics, 600 plus youth participants. You know, our youth tennis match play was full weekly. Our adult socials were full. Our pickleball clinics, we ran 9 weeks of pickleball clinics and, you know, had almost 1,000 people in our programs there. So, I mean, we have been busy, especially with the construction going on. Then you take into consideration things that don't happen necessarily at the mark. You know, we had 131 teams in our two outdoor volleyball tournaments over the summer. And, you know, we have, you know, 760 plus people playing adult softball, which is pretty awesome when you take into consideration what's going on. So it's been a busy summer, and you know, we love what we do. We do, you know, weeks 9 and 10 start to get tasking just with a lot of things going on, but our staff has done an absolutely phenomenal job.
Okay, so have you moved into the fall programming?
We've got some fall programming that is ready and happening here. We've got some tennis programming actually for fall one for youth programming starts beginning of next week. We've got some additional fall youth and family programs. We've got something that's really cool that's going to be happening here called the Future Fashion Stars, and it's a new program and partnership that we are working with a group where ultimately students will be able to create like a fashion line from concept to collection, and they'll both work individually as well as with teams to create some designs. And this is preparatory for things that are going to happen in the future community center. So this is happening in the fall, and this is the type of stuff with programming that we'll have it at the mine when we open.
Okay, so what is the update on the new building, the rec center, the mine? When is that going to open?
Well, we don't have a firm date yet, but we are moving very, very quickly on everything going on over there, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to you know, have more updates soon on that, but we're not ready to give a hard date yet. But I think we're confident to be able to say that we will have programming opportunities as soon as we open in, you know, I would say late fall, early winter, potentially around that, you know, first of the year time frame.
Okay.
But we're not quite there yet. But you'll see a lot happening. You know, the asphalt pavement is all in that area. You've got the playground equipment is all there on site and getting ready to be installed in the next few weeks. The interior spaces, the building is pretty much at a point now where interior work is going to be the primary focus. So everything on the exterior is almost completely secured and buttoned up.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
You know, just as a reminder for recreation and the PC Mark, you know, parking and transportation is still a challenge. We still have a lot of things happening in our facility. So even though summer programs are winding down, just because they are winding down doesn't mean that our parking is not as well. So be mindful of that. Specifically, Tuesdays, Thursday mornings, there's a lot of things happening. We encourage everybody to bus, bike, and walk there. It is on the transit route. And with our programs being year-round, we anticipate going to continue.
Okay, Tate Shaw, Assistant Park City Recreation Director. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.